Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
That's the truth. Oh, yes. Good morning, and welcome to Winning with Mainstay and Anna Lee and Bob and Ruthie. Ruthie, you just have come into this like a champ, baby. You've got it under control.
Hey, I appreciate that, Anna Lee. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and to learn from you and Bob. I want to learn how to win.
Yeah, well, this is good. You know, you're at the right age. You start now, and later on, you're not going to have a lot of the problems that people are having now. You know, we're looking at all of the things that are going on and all of the happenings in our country right now. You know, the fires devastating over in the West Coast and the political unrest and places getting torn apart and the whole health epidemic we're going through right now. It's such a chain effect that we're feeling. And Bob and I were talking about this the other day, and one of the things we found, Bob, as we were talking, that a lot of people aren't thinking about is the effect that all of this is having on our colleges. You know, they kind of sit right in the middle of all this.
Right. And these are people not too far off from your age, right, Ruthie?
That's right. Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
Yeah. You know, so you've got people all of a sudden who were either about to enter college, had maybe gone through one semester, a full semester, a full year, and all of a sudden the world is upside down. And I don't think there's one word we can use in the same sentence as college tuition, and that word is cheap.
That is correct.
I mean,
that is correct.
Man, it is expensive to get an education. And what's happening now that we've seen and we've kind of been tracking is that people are saying, whoa, wait a minute. We paid you this much money to get this type of service, and now we're getting something totally different. So that's going into now what we're seeing turning into actual lawsuits. Mm-hmm. I mean, what was the number we found, Bob? How many of the colleges now are getting sued right now? I mean, this was
I think it's over
September.
Yeah, it's over 30 or right around that number 30. And it's really, you know, what are they promoting? What are they advertising? And it's really the college experience. And when you step back and, you know, these folks are conducting a cost-benefit analysis, you know, is it really worth, you know, paying, especially a private school, tuition and all of the expenses associated with sending a child there when there is no classroom or even campus life?
Well, and you know, you go back to this whole thing in they're saying, okay, should we not open the colleges? Should we open our schools?
Right.
We had one of our clients in here last week, and she has to report to the school, but she's teaching her children remotely. Now, imagine this. She is a grammar school teacher, okay? She has 34 children she is teaching via computer. Do you think that's a challenge?
Wow.
I mean, she was telling me she's putting in 12, 15 hours a day just trying to communicate with these children and keeping up with them. But then let's kind of go back to the college, because I digressed there for a minute. You know, they're saying, okay, should we open, should we not open? Well, they did all kind of studies, and amazingly, 43% of students said they didn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the college professors are saying, who the majority of them are much older?
Right, right. They're in that high-risk category, at least far higher risk than the students themselves. And,
yeah.
I don't think any of them feel safe.
No, and then, you know, if they do go back, they've got to have the desk behind them, desk on side, desk in front, empty. So the classes cannot put the same number of people into them that they normally would. So what are they going to do? Teach more classes, or some remote, some with people there? I mean, when you consider that people are paying up to $45,000, $50,000 a year for a private university education, is this what we had in mind? This is something I think we really have to think about. And I'd love to hear, excuse me, from all of you out there. So either call us or text us, 437-1620. Love to hear your opinion, or if you have a student at home that is going through this. You know, so the CARES Act came along and said, okay, well, we're going to try to help the students, and we're going to try to help the people that have debt right now. And they, like everything we do, we throw money at a problem.
Right.
It helped for a little while, didn't help for long. And one of the problems that we're facing, whether we like to admit it or not, is the fact of, before this started, we put restrictions on foreign college students, and now they don't want to travel here. Well, guess where those higher end universities get a whole lot of their money?
Yeah, they from these students, right? And they and the aid that comes in for these students, and I know there's several programs, you know, and especially in the graduate programs, where, you know, we're very dependent on international students.
Yeah, I mean, we just are. You think about it, University of California at Berkeley, they got 15.2 million of the emergency financial aid grant. But guess what? That doesn't dribble down to the student. You know, if the student is down there and they need more than $500, mm-hmm. They're in bad shape. And think of these students who took, and I'm not, you know, I don't profess to be a college planning expert, because I am not, understand that. My forte is more the retirement group, but I know that kids go in and they apply for financial aid. And very often that aid is based upon a reflection of the family's financial status.
Right.
But guess what they look at? 2 years back.
Right.
And what do we see happening now?
It's a lot different than things were 2 years ago. 2 years ago, things were, I would bet, in most instances, very good. And, mm-hmm. you know, but the need is now. Looking back 2 years seems, you know, terribly unfair. But, you know, there's a policy behind that, and that's just so that people can't make changes in their life all of a sudden and then qualify. So we understand it, but it isn't fair.
No, well, not right now. I mean, when your parents either lost their job or their hours have been cut, so they don't make as much money. But we're looking at 2 years ago when they made a full income and, you know, had fairly successful jobs or very successful jobs. And all of a sudden, over the last year, 6 months, they're saying, wow, the whole financial aspect has changed. So a lot of these kids are right now kind of in a limbo type situation.
And of course, the CARES Act, and that's the Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security Act, really did two things. It suspended the payments, dropped the interest to zero on student loans. And, you know, so these, you know, it's suspended a lot like we've seen a lot of things, you know. It's not loan forgiveness, but it is suspending the interest accruing and the payments being due. And then the other thing is it earmarked a lot of money for those adversely impacted by the coronavirus. It has nothing to do with losing a job, parents losing a job. You know, it has nothing to do
with the student.
Right.
You know, their parents maybe, but not the student. We've got a couple of questions. Let's see what those are if we have to defer those to someone who knows more about student loans than I do. What do we have, Ruthie?
Sure. So one person is curious, and I'm curious as well, about what is the difference between a subsidized versus an unsubsidized student loan?
I can jump in on this one.
Go ahead, Bob.
The subsidized student loans are subsidized by the federal government, who pays the interest accruing during the time you remain in school. So you start out as a freshman, or you apply for the FAFSA and receive student aid or student loan, and that interest that accrues is actually paid by the federal government during the time you're in school. And I believe it is covered for, what is it, Ruthie, you may know, 3 months, 6 months after you graduate, and it, for a certain period of time thereafter. And then the interest starts accruing. The interest is always accruing. It's just paid by someone else after you graduate.
Yes.
Wait. Not necessarily after you graduate, but when you're no longer in school. So
that's it. And I believe full time.
Right.
You can carry the minimum credit hours.
And of course, unsubsidized means the interest accrues immediately while you're in school, while you're taking classes, while you're trying to earn your degree. So subsidized is far more favorable as far as securing if you're a student.
That is good to know.
You know, that's part of what's happening now. It's that 6 month period, because if people are deciding to wait out before going back to school and they take off for 6 months or they take off for a year, that 6 months once they graduate that they would normally have to say, I don't have to start paying on this for 6 months, that goes away if they skip an entire semester or they skip, you know, too much time. So that's part of the quandary that's going on now, too. And you wonder if that's going to stop or if somebody's going to come in and make some kind of new rules on these things, because we haven't been through this kind of thing before. And was there another question also, Ruthie, on that?
There is. In sort of the same vein of thought, this person says, you know, I have 8 different student loans. Which one should I pay off first? How do I prioritize?
Well, your biggest thing, I would think they would go by interest rate. I would think, Bob, get rid of the higher interest rates first, if you can.
And I've seen my daughters, and they're really all over the place, as high as 7 and as low as 4. Now, that isn't all over the place, but that's a pretty big spread.
That's a pretty big gap.
Right. And, of course, pay off the higher interest rate loans first. The other thing you can do is look into consolidating. And the average interest rate of all of the loans will probably come out less if you do consolidate. But certainly pay off the higher interest rate loans first.
And I think part of the mistake that sometimes people make is they take for granted that idea that I don't have to start paying for this till later. But if you can start paying, now think about this. If you can start paying earlier rather than later, like right now, because of the CARES Act, people have been given a hiatus. They don't have to make payments. But if you can, this is when you should be paying, because what are you paying on? You're paying on principal. You're not paying on the interest.
Right.
So that takes that loan down so much quicker.
Right.
Several years ago, I had a young pharmacist come in, and she was kind of doing a part-time job at one of the major pharmacies, and she had, I mean, an unbelievable debt. And like you said, Bob, kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And her question was pretty much the same. Now, she had a part-time job at a pharmacy, was making unbelievably good money, and had the nerve to come in and ask me, when should I start paying? Yesterday.
Right, right.
Yesterday. That's when you start. You don't put it off just because you can. You know, Bob can tell you, because he pretty much knows my business philosophy and how I do things. All of my bills, my automobile, the office building, my home, I pay extra on everything. And that extra goes toward the principal. So what am I doing? I'm taking, you know, a 5-year loan and making it maybe a 3-year. I'm taking a 25-year loan and making it a 15.
Right.
And think about how much interest I'm saving doing that.
Right.
So
you're accelerating the payoff date, and that's what it's all about. And we, let's see, the caller with 8 different student loans. You know, I remember taking a look at this, and with them all over the place, and this is my own daughter's who has several of these, there were some that were considerably higher, but she could pay those off first and then get her average rate down lower than what they were willing to offer by consolidating them. So,
right.
You know, you can pick and choose, but you know, it's very tough to stay that course, keep paying. I know 40-year-olds that are paying on their student loans.
Which is just crazy.
Yes.
That is just crazy. I think it's because people put it off.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the second biggest expense in planning. And, you know, you would think the first is saving for a home or paying on a home. It's not. That's third.
No.
First is... what is it? Planning for retirement, putting away money for retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Second is not only paying on student loans, but putting money away for your children to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, of course, is the home. So, yeah, it's up
right
there.
We had a young doctor come in here several years ago. He was an intern. He was going to a fellowship in Texas, and I'll never forget, he came in all proud of himself because this was going to be the part of his career where he started making money. And he started talking about buying a home, and then when he moves, having that one as a rental, and he buys the next one. And I said, wait, didn't we start this conversation with you telling me you have a very big student loan? And he said, well, yes, ma'am. I said, then why are you going to go out and get into more debt?
Right.
The first thing you want to do is you want to pay off the debt. So we did a whole projection for him, showing him how much money he would save, so that later in his life, when he's really making money, guess what? He can buy whatever he wants. He's not still paying off these loans that have just snowballed on him during all these years. And I think if people... And you know, how many times do y'all hear me say this? I know it gets old after a while, but it's true. If you do the numbers and you look at what those numbers are going to be, if you just put it off, believe me, it is an incentive to say, I'm getting rid of this.
Right.
I just saved how much money? $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. I don't know about you, but I could do a lot with that kind of money.
Right, right. It's interesting how we evolve into the different loan or borrowing arrangements. You know, we start, and we all know this. And I mean, in high school, these kids are getting credit card offers in the mail. I've seen them. And you know, they may, you know, and sometimes they have a card in there and they'll just get going with it. And next thing you know, you're at, you know, 20 something percent interest. And then, you know, you live and learn, you get that paid off. And then, you know, you go to college, you secure these student loans and you're paying something, you know, certainly over 5% and hopefully under 10. And then, you know, you get that paid off and, or hopefully you get it paid off and, you know, you buy a home, you secure a mortgage to purchase it. And that's when you kind of just say, ah, you know, this is, you know, I hate to say it because, but it's good debt. It's good debt. A mortgage, you know, by the time you've been able to secure that mortgage, you've rented. And I would say in most instances, folks are paying less on their monthly mortgage payment than they were when they were paying rent.
Probably. And they're establishing ownership. Right now, with the way our tax tables are, with the huge standard deduction, most of us are not able to use that interest to write off. But for years, that was one of the biggest things that we could write off, was the interest on our home, which is what Bob was referencing, is good debt versus bad debt. Bad debt is debt that gets you nowhere and it gets you nothing.
Right.
You know, good debt is debt that you can either write off or you have something to show for it after everything is said and done.
Right.
So one of the things I'm going to encourage some of our people to do is, you know, if you do go off to college this year and you're a little nervous about things, consider your local colleges. We have very good colleges right here, right under our noses. Pensacola State is a wonderful institution. You know, UWF is very high standards of learning. Nice campus. They're offering classes. So instead of taking that year off, think about spending less money. Use some of this time to pay down the principal on what you do owe, but continue your education. Don't stop. There was a study done that says 10% of people who take a gap year never go back to college. So you may have thrown away 1, 2, 3 years of already trying to get there. You know, you see these stories of people when they're 50, 60, 70 years old going back to complete college because they never did.
Huh.
And that's why they took that gap year and stopped.
Yeah. And I'm surprised. What did you say? 10%?
10%.
Yeah. I'm surprised it's not higher. Maybe it's the people that call it a gap year, because I know people that, you know, I'm going to, you know, maybe they don't label it a gap year, but I would say a lot of people I've met that take time off, they never go back. You know, it's just such a shame.
It is. And I want all of you out there who are listening to think about questions that you might have and call us or text us at 437-1620. We would love to hear from you, hear your opinions, your fears about what's going on, or your solutions. Maybe some of you have a solution that we need to listen to. I think we need to pull in this together, and we need to help our younger people who are out there and give them some ideas so that they can find some way to continue their education or rethink. So let's go find out what's happening in the world. I think we know a lot of it, but maybe we got some good news in there.
Some more positive news as the COVID numbers just been released. And mostly positive in our listening area. We'll have the details on that. And protest can and do work. That's the message from local organizers. We'll hear what they have to say as well.
News. I'm Chris Foster. A vote's planned this week on a Senate Republican coronavirus relief package that Democrats say is too small.
White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows on Fox Business talking about the prospects for an agreement with congressional Democrats.
There's more that we agree upon than what we disagree upon, and I think it's time that we put politics aside.
The president yesterday claimed Democrats are reluctant to compromise because it will boost his reelection chances. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has denied this charge.
Fox's John Decker in Washington. House Democrats passed their own plan in May. Endangered children are rescued during a week-long operation in Indianapolis.
The U.S. Marshals Service rescued eight minors, 6 to 17 years of age, that are believed to have been trafficked. Federal sweeps in recent weeks also located dozens of critically missing kids in Ohio and Georgia.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 10:31. I'm Joe Ford, News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Clear skies, 84 degrees right now. 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms later on today. Otherwise, sunny skies throughout the day. We'll get to around 91. For a third consecutive day, no new deaths due to COVID-19 have been reported in our two-county area. According to the Florida Department of Health, the state has surpassed 650,000 total cases, and the death toll among residents increased by 44 to 11,915. Here locally, Escambia County added 31 cases, and Santa Rosa County added just 8. Between two counties, there are 16,533 total cases and 252 deaths among residents. It's proof that protests can and do work. That's what local organizers say as changes have been made in recent weeks. Of course, the Confederate Monument at Lee Square is being removed, and a Citizens Advisory Committee for the Pensacola Police Department has been established. Above all, protesters have remained peaceful.
I'll be honest with you. Prayer. We haven't had one fight, one shooting during these protests, and I believe that's a wonderful thing.
Organizer Caleb Houston tells Channel 3 their group makes sure safety is the number one priority, even going as far to set up a safety team at each of their demonstrations.
Good Tuesday. We're keeping temperatures into the upper 80s and lower 90s to finish out the rest of the work week, so not too bad. But the trade-off is more humidity. Feels like temperatures back to around 100 degrees when it's not raining. And speaking of rain, we do have chances each and every day as we go forward towards the weekend. Right now, 30 to 50%. Some of this activity does peak around Saturday and Sunday at around 50 to 60% as well. For now, though, I am meteorologist Joseph Neubauer reporting in the Channel 3 First Warning Weather Center.
And all quiet on the roads right now, not seeing any active accidents to slow you down. Earlier problem at Highway 29 at West Burgess Road is in the clearing stages. It's 10:33 at News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
I'm Jennifer Kashinka with Your Money Now. Stocks are sharply lower. The Dow Industrials down 382 at 27,751. The NASDAQ is down 238. The S&P 500 off 56. The Wall Street Journal says the FAA is reviewing quality control lapses at Boeing that could stretch back almost a decade. This latest assessment was prompted by production issues at a Boeing 787 Dreamliner factory. An internal FAA memo showed Boeing notified regulators it had produce parts that did not meet its own design and manufacturing standards. Boeing shares down 3.5%. Ill-timed bets on rising demand have ExxonMobil facing a shortfall of about $48 billion through 2021, according to a Reuters tally, a situation that will require the top U.S. oil company to make deep cuts to its staff and projects. This year, Exxon borrowed $23 billion to pay its bills, nearly doubling its outstanding debt. That's Your Money Now.
Gathering at Pensacola Beach is a wonderful family experience. If you thought of having a family celebration or an amazing beach wedding, there's a very special home now available, Casa de Luna. Casa de Luna is spacious with room for large families. It has 9 bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views. The pool can be heated for swimming in colder months. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on sand level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the sand level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly and another has a new jacuzzi. And there's a large gaming porch with pool table, foosball, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna owner Tim at 791-6400. That's 791-6400. 791-6400.
Now, more of the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
And they stay there. All right. Here we are back winning with Mainstay and Bob and Annalee and Ruthie, and talking today about all these problems the colleges are going through and the kids are going through. And, you know, I'm always open for questions no matter what you're thinking about. And while we were at break, I think we had a question come in, didn't we, Ruthie?
We sure did. Yes, this is a question changing gears a little bit from student loans to a different season of life. This question says, at what age should I begin looking at my Social Security benefits? Is there a magic number?
Ooh. Our profession, Bob and I, as planners, would be so much easier if there were a magic number. Let me go through a couple of things with Social Security. First of all, I think everyone should consistently be checking the Social Security website to make sure your earnings every year are reported correctly, because they can and do make mistakes. So I think everybody, every age, should be checking your Social Security to make sure your earnings have been reported correctly. Now, when it comes to getting your Social Security benefit, there's no magic number, but here's a couple of things to kind of put in your mind. Full retirement age is somewhere between 66 and 67 for everybody. Now, what that means is you get a much higher benefit, and once you reach that optimum age, no matter how much money you make, you don't have to give any Social Security back. Under that age, if you make what Social Security considers too much money, and it's not a lot of money, you have to give some of the Social Security benefit back. So if you have that wonderful thing called a JOB, and Social Security is you could get it, but I truly don't see any sense in getting it if you have to give some of it back. Wait at least, if you can economically, till you hit that 66 or 67. Now, Bob, you and I have talked about this. We both agree on this. Once you hit that full retirement age, 66, 67, if you still have that wonderful thing called a JOB.
Right.
Bob and I both kind of believe that put it off till 70.
Keep going.
And you want to kind of take that up, Bob, as to why?
Well, you're going to get more, and the amount is somewhere around 8.3% more per year. So if you don't need that money, go ahead and defer it. And, you know, your money, you know, unless you, well, there are probably two or three, well, I'll say two reasons why you may want to take it, and that would be if you are single and you are terminally ill, or you just need the money. You know, whatever you are making is not enough. And any of those two reasons, I think may trump what we're describing. But if you can, it's always better to defer your Social Security, right? Especially if you're working.
And I would invite you, if you'd like to, or anybody who's listening, call our office, 437-3127, and tell Kristen you want to set up a time to talk with Bob and I, and we can run all kind of numbers for you as to what would happen if you take it now, if you take it later. This is a prime time while taxes are low, to use some of that highly taxable money first. In other words, that high IRA money, use some of that now to live on if you stop working, and let that Social Security benefit continue to go up. But you really have to look at the numbers. And like Bob said, are you single? Are you married? Are you the higher wage earner? Are you a widow?
Are you
a divorcee?
Are you considerably older than your spouse?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If there's a big age gap, another consideration. So.
Yeah. They did not make Social Security easy. You know, it for a while, I think people thought you just kind of throw a dart at the wall and whatever age it lands on, that's when you take it. But in reality, it should be part of your full financial plan. And whoever you're going to for advice should be running those numbers for you. And if they're not, they're not a planner.
Right.
They're a broker who's there basically to take your money. You need a planner. So call us, 437-3127, set a time, and Bob and I would love to work with you on that. I hope that helped. I didn't mean to be evasive, but there just is no yes, no answer for that. If there were, my job would be so much easier.
Right. But I think the question, you know, yeah. I think the listener's question was when to start looking at Social mm-hmm. Security benefits now. And we don't even need to know your age.
No.
Start looking at them now and start mm-hmm. looking at the how it gets added up, how it gets computed. And you can go on that website, ssa.gov, put in the information, and they will resume sending you an annual printout of what you're entitled to and what you will likely be entitled to if you continue down the road you're on.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just keep looking and come in and we'll run numbers for you if that helps at all. So actually on the show, we started talking about the problems, that both students and schools are going through. The schools, many of them are underwater. They were facing a big crisis before all this started. They had a drop in state funding, a drop in international students, which we have already said has been a very rich source of income for our schools. And kids are starting to reassess the value a college education. What is its value?
Right.
You know, we were kind of talking about that before. The sad part is when most of us go to college, we have no idea of what we want to do and what we want to be. And our parents are spending, or we're spending via loans, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year to figure out what we want to be. And that's where I go back to that idea. Maybe start with the local university. Start with something where you give yourself time to find out. I mean, let's put it this way. If you're spending, let's say, $45,000 a year, or let's do a round number, let's say $40,000 a year, and you're going to be in school for 5 years, that's $200,000 you've spent. And if your life ambition is to, let's say, do one of the most noble things you can do and be a teacher, let's face it, people, our teachers are just not well paid.
Right.
You know, so is it worth you going to one of the higher universities to get that degree? I think that's something that we have to start looking at. I mean, not everybody should be going to Harvard or MIT or these places that tout themselves for the type of education they give. Your career, how much is it going to pay you back?
Right.
And I think we have to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many people, Bob, do you think, young kids going into school, they go into school, oh, yeah, I'm going to be an engineer. Oh, yeah, I'm going to be a doctor. How many of them do you think change their minds?
Gosh, that's a great question. I would say certainly well over half.
Yeah.
And it might be, it might be three quarters. I certainly changed.
Yeah. Oh, well, you and I both.
Yeah.
I mean, my degree is education, which I'm glad because I still just teach all the time. But I certainly changed that career path of education. Your original degree was in law.
Right. And trust me, everybody, she does teach, okay? She never stops, okay?
This is true. I try, but it doesn't work. You know, so I think we have to think about what's going on right now with our younger people. Try to help guide them. The schools are in trouble. We've talked about that. Lower birth rates, that's another reason the schools are in trouble. I mean, back when we had the baby boomers getting ready to go to school and college, that's when a lot of these universities were built. Well, guess what? The generations coming behind are not that big. So we've got to figure out what's going to happen and what is the value of the education that you're getting. You know, and there's nothing wrong with trade school, for goodness sake.
Right.
I think it's honorable.
Right. It's very focused. You know, you're not, not that this isn't important, but you're not taking history, English, and all of those rounding courses that are very important, but you got a lot of it in high school. And, you know, to finish out your degree, it's a very specific curriculum, and I think it lends itself well for a lot of folks. One of the things I looked at was the percent of students receiving financial aid, and it's a lot higher than I thought. At public universities, colleges and universities, it's 84%. At private colleges and universities, it is over 90%.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're a college student or a high school student, you know, anticipating going to college, you're probably going to be receiving some sort of financial aid. And, you know, do your homework.
You know, and this brings us back to this whole thing right now. Everybody's kind of tiptoeing through this whole economic aspect that we've got. You know, parents are debating, do I take from my retirement fund to pay the child's loan? Economically, and right. Boy, this is hard to say, but economically, that answer is no. Because there are loans for a college education. There are things you can do. Guess what? There are no loans. There are no incentive payments. None of that exists for retirement. Mm-hmm. So if you don't keep your retirement going, then nobody is going to be there to help you when you get there. And right now, with all the ups and downs and the unemployment and layoffs and everything that's happening, we're finding people are having to dip into some of those savings, and that's bad.
Right.
That's bad.
I can't think of a time ever, and I've been around almost, for a long, long time, let's put it that way. I can't think of a time where everybody has been so universally affected by so many things. And, the word global pandemic, that means nobody is escaping this. You know, everybody is affected by this. And as you said, unemployment, civil unrest, an election year here in this country. And then think about the people in Lake Charles, Louisiana, and the people out west, in these fires, and, just to complicate their lives and those entire areas. So there's so much going on. I don't think there's been a time, certainly in my life, where I've seen so much all at the same time.
And you know, Bob, and you know, you hear it, I hear it all the time. Somebody was in here the other day, and the S&P is up this much, how come my portfolio isn't? Well, not everything right now across the board is benefiting. You know, the S&P right now is so lopsided in technology. And technology, of course, is taking off like crazy because people are home. But look at what was the darling of investing not that long ago? It was energy.
Right.
Energy was the biggie. Yes. Oh, yeah, buy stock in Mobil, buy stock in Exxon, buy stock in Chevron. This is the future. Energy right now is down 32%.
Right. Right.
So, you know, when you're looking at these things and you cannot, I don't care who you are, you just can't time the market and say, oh, this is going to be the week for IBM. This is going to be the week for Apple. This is going to be the week for we're in such a time of unbelievable ups and downs. Dow Jones taking off one day, bottom being the next. You know, it's just amazing. Right. Financials right now, financials are down 20%.
Right.
You know, when the last time was that happened, right?
Yeah, about 2008.
2008.
Probably came out in 2009. But
yeah. And you know, our interest rates are so low that people have made a lot of loans, which the financial aspects are now starting to worry: are these people going to be able to pay them? Some of them have already stopped paying on them.
Right.
So right now, I would say to you, if you're even to where you were before all this started, you're ahead. If you're ahead of where you were before all this started, you're really doing well. But if you're going into this expecting the 20-30% returns, believe me, it's not going to last.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. We've had the stimulus that's brought us back up. We've had low interest rates. Those low rates, I mean, how long can we keep those up?
Yeah, they're going to have to remain for a while. But, yeah, interest rates have been have never been lower. And, what a great time, you know, as we've shared with our listeners, what a great time to refinance, what a great time to, consolidate debt. It's great in terms of being a borrower. However, being a saver or a conservative mm-hmm. investor, these are not the best of times. We do have low interest rates, but what's nice on the investment side, we also are enjoying low inflation. So
and this is true for now, but I think when it hits, it is going to escalate like crazy.
Sure.
And I think we better be putting money aside to get ready for that. Because I think we have to see an up in interest rates. We have to see a lot of this ceasing. I mean, if you just look at the patterns that we've had, the slide in economic activity we had was just unprecedented.
Right.
April turned out to be one of our worst. We had a good rebound in May. That continued into June. Why? We had the fiscal stimulus, the reopening
right.
of things. July looked pretty good, but not as impressive as June was.
Right. And
we just got to be aware.
You discussed with the listeners the difficulty in timing the market. You know,
mm-hmm.
push that out to timing certain industries, certain sectors, individual companies, you just can't do it. And again, diversification.
Mm-hmm. It's diversification in that thing of, and you and I were talking about this the other day, I've always worked in the aspect that I put my head down and I come to work.
Right.
I If I have an appointment at 8 o'clock, I'm here at 7:30. If I don't have an appointment at 8 o'clock, I'm here at 7:30, and I work the full day. And I just keep my eye on the goal. Mm-hmm. And investing's got to be the same thing. You diversify, you get something that suits the risk profile that you as an individual have, and you hang on.
Right.
That is the name of the game. The people who lost big amounts of money in 2008, what do you think happened back there? They jumped on the bandwagon of real estate, first of all, way too late. It had already made its money. And when it dropped, what happened?
Right. Yeah.
They lost their money.
They lost their money. Yeah. They couldn't sell. Yeah. They couldn't sell for what they had borrowed to purchase it.
No. Yeah. No, nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. So I say to you, you know, don't give up during these times. I know it's difficult with all of us pretty much sequestered. We certainly don't have the social life we normally have. I talked to my sister-in-law yesterday. I haven't seen she and my brother for 9 months. I haven't seen the rest of my family since December. So that's going into, you know, that 9 month stretch, and it's getting difficult. And it can be, if we allow it, it can be depressing, it can be scary. But we've got to do with this what we're saying you do with the market.
Right.
You do what's right, you hang on, you look at the future, and you know that it's going to be better. I can't tell you when. I can't tell you, you know, if you look at a chart, and Bob, you've got that chart of, you know, the manufacturing, how it started recovering, mm-hmm. and where it was in 2011 and the drop it took in like 15, 16, and then it went way up right as we got in between 18, 19, and then took an unbelievably sharp decline.
Right.
I mean, we went from a 5% up to a negative 20.
Right.
You don't recover from that overnight.
Right. Yeah, and for our listeners, and we talked about a couple of things today. Certainly the college debt, the student loans,
mm-hmm.
and a little bit on Social Security. And one other thing I wanted to interject: how many times do we have folks that come in and say, you know, these are, you know, they have the end of days mentality. I need to take it now because it's not going to be there when, you know, when I'm waiting. If I'm waiting till full retirement age, and so they go ahead and jump on at 62. And
yeah.
You know, how many times do we hear that? Well, if you paid in, you're going to get it. That, you know, let's just stop with that. So yeah, you know, there is
a
lot
of
hysteria.
Yeah, don't make the problem worse.
That's right. That's right. And if you can continue to work, make money, and defer that Social Security, that is in most instances a very good idea.
Yeah. And I know now we're all trying to save taxes and we're thinking about our own benefits, but, you know, people, FICA is necessary.
Yeah.
That is taken out of your paycheck. Your employer pays half, you pay half. That is exactly what funds Social Security and Medicare. If we stop putting in, it's going to run out.
That's correct.
Go out, say please. Say thank you. Smiles. We'll make it a wonderful world. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
What a wonderful world.